Let's go ahead and get going here, please. And we'll begin with a word of prayer. Our Father, we pray that as we go through the law, you will instruct our hearts and that we would be dependent on you for interpreting some difficult places we run across, and we commit the hour or the 45 minutes to your care. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, so we are looking at the way the law causes us to know certain things about our God. These are what the Lord wants us to know so that we will have an appreciation for his holiness, his justice, which we're talking about now, and his love, which we'll talk about as soon as we're done with his justice. All right, now we come to a section where we're dealing with justice involving any kind of economic loss. And we're going to see that the way the Mosaic Law handles this is much different from the way we handle it in our justice system today. But first, before we do that, we need to go back to last week because I didn't allow time to talk about what we need to talk about. This is not advancing. So remember last week we were talking about in chapter 21, turn back there to chapter 21, verses 22 through 25, we need to go back there and take another look at this. Now, my literal translation is the next slide, but unfortunately, we can't get to it. We'll just read it out of the ESV. When men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, but there is no harm, and that should be translated, there's no severe harm, the one who hit her shall surely be fined, as the woman's husband shall impose on him, he shall pay as the judges determine. Notice then, here we go, good. Interesting, her children come out. I suppose this would cover the possibility that there would be twins or maybe even triplets, and that the woman was not at her due date yet. This is a premature birth, and if there's no severe damage, if the mother is not harmed and the child or children are born premature, they're not so premature that they survive. You know, either one or two or three or however many children there are. And so in a case like that, there is to be a monetary assessment made because the wife wasn't expecting, neither was her husband, expecting children so soon. They hadn't planned on being parents this quickly. There's some trauma involved in this. And the men who were fighting didn't mean to strike the woman, but they did. And we said, this is a passage that deals with, it's a paradigm. It's a model for what you do in instances when there is some sort of problem that somebody caused. They didn't do it on purpose, but then again, they were doing something that really, they shouldn't have been doing, and therefore it wasn't entirely accidental either. And so last week, we got wondering, what would qualify for something like that today? And here we go. I think I came up with something that fits the bill, that fits the model. Here you've got a guy, he's cruising down the highway in his Nissan Armada. Oh, it's a nice car. We got to travel in one when we went 2 years ago to the Grand Canyon. A beautiful vehicle, but it's big and it's heavy. All right? When you drive something like that, you've got a big responsibility. What would happen if you hit a smart for two car with something like that? What now?
You'd never
know. Like, you know, oh, what was that bump as you squashed it flat? But any time you get behind the wheel of a car, especially a big one, you are driving a vehicle. If you're going, say you're going 55 miles an hour, the speed limit, what's the kinetic energy that you would have to transfer and dissipate if you hit, say, a pedestrian, or if you hit a cyclist? A couple of years ago, there was a cyclist in Greer. He was riding his bike down South Carolina 290. That's a busy road to be riding your bike. He had recently taken up cycling to get exercise. All right? Had a couple of kids. He was a pastor of a church in the area. And a person in a big SUV hit him and sent him into eternity instantly. Did she mean to do that? Of course not. What caused the accident? Well, they investigated. They couldn't find a cause for the accident. Sun glinting in the wrong way. She couldn't see the cyclist on the side of the road. Or worse, let's say, you know, we don't know this, but let's say she was texting. Okay? Wow, right now in the South Carolina legislature, there is a bill called the Hands-Free Bill, and it creates a hefty fine if a person is texting while driving, and they've got the phone in their hand. How many of you have, we'll do a show of hands here, how many of you have been driving down the road and you see a driver with their phone like up on the steering wheel, and they're looking down, they're looking up, they're looking down, and then you can see them with their thumbs and they're sending somebody a text while they're driving down the road. That is egregious, distracted driving. You're more dangerous than a person who is dead drunk and behind the wheel. That's been shown statistically. Wow. But that's a good example of somebody who didn't kill somebody on purpose, but it wasn't entirely accidental either, was it? Should have known better than to be texting and driving. So what happens if, say, you're involved in an accident, but nobody's hurt? You aren't hurt. The other driver's not hurt. Of course, there's economic loss to the person's car. There's economic a loss to your car. But let's say the other person has collision insurance and you have collision insurance. Then it's just kind of like, well, then, you know, the economic loss and restitution is handled by insurance these days. Didn't have that back in Mosaic times, of course. But then here's the other possibility that could happen. But notice, if there is serious injury, it's left ambiguous. I think we should see this would be serious injury either to the mother or to the child or children, or maybe both. Maybe the pregnant woman is injured and there has been injury to her unborn child. In a case like that, notice If there is serious injury, then you will give life in substitution for life, eye in substitution for eye, tooth in substitution for tooth, hand in substitution for hand, foot in substitution for foot, and it gets down to something as minor as bruise for bruise. And of course, we are used to referring to this as lex talionis. Now, the big question is, was this intended to be literal? If somebody is killed either the pregnant woman or her child, or both of them, because basically the Hebrew has no word for fetus. It says it uses the Hebrew word yeladim, which is the usual word for a child. That's how the Bible views the unborn child that's in a pregnant woman's womb. No such thing as a fetus that hasn't quite, you know, achieved viability, or, you know, the way people today measure viability. And is this a person who's in the mother's womb? The answer is, it is a person. It's a child with all the rights and privileges of a child. And so basically, if there's any harm to the woman or to the child, should we then institute capital punishment in a case where these guys didn't mean to cause injury, but they did? Or in a case where somebody might cause an accident and somebody would lose an eye? Do we poke his eye out? Or if there's a tooth knocked out, do we knock out the guy's tooth? Or somehow his hand gets cut off. Do we cut off somebody's hand, literally? What do you think? Is this to be instituted literally? Or is there another overriding purpose to lex talionis? What do you think? We have no instance in the scripture that lex talionis was ever applied literally for crimes or, you know, injury that was unintentional. Yes?
It was faulty.
Oh, Peggy, your judgment is not faulty. You're one of the best answerers of questions I've ever seen. Yes, I think we've already seen this, remember, in the last chapter, where in chapter 21, let's go back there, we have an actual instance. Oh, wait a minute, we're in chapter 21. Here we go, chapter 21, verse 18. When men quarrel and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, and the man does not die but takes to his bed, then if the man rises again and walks outdoors with his staff, he who struck him shall be clear, only he shall pay for the loss of his time and shall have him thoroughly healed. All right, so there's an example of what we're talking about. Lex talionis is given to make sure that the restitution fits the severity of the crime, but no worse than the crime. Can anybody think of somebody in the Old Testament who could have learned something from this principle that the restitution should match the damage suffered? It's back in the early chapters of Genesis. Does that give a hint? His name starts with L. There's another hint. He was boastful. Lamech. Yes, Lamech. What did he boast? He says, I have killed a man for wounding me or for striking me. What? That death doesn't fit the crime. That was beyond what the Lord deemed just. So this is the foundation then for a modern practice of assessing damages and applying an appropriate restitution. Now, every once in a while in our society, we kind of go overboard with this, don't we? A few years ago, a lady was driving through a McDonald's drive-thru. She ordered a cup of coffee, something else too, probably to go with it. And as she was handling the cup of coffee, it slipped from her hand, spilled on her leg, and caused second-degree burns and a little bit of scarring. And she sued McDonald's because there was no warning on the cup. Contents are hot. And she won. I don't remember now. Does anybody remember how much the settlement was? $3 million? Okay, you would say, that's not just. That doesn't fit the qualifications for lex talionis. That's absurd. But that's what our justice system does sometimes. So now, if you get a cup of coffee at a McDonald's drive-in, guess what you're going to see on the cup? Caution, contents hot. Okay, well, I don't blame McDonald's for putting that on the cup after all that. So basically, I would argue that this is to make sure that the restitution is not, it fits the damage suffered. And that's the whole idea here. If, let's say, the pregnant lady is struck, child's okay, but it causes hemorrhaging or something, and the pregnant woman survives the injury, but she's out of commission for quite a while till she recovers from the damage that guy did when he struck her inadvertently. And so we have to be careful that we structure in our justice system settlements that are truly in line with what the damage has been caused. Yes, doctor. It would be a severe penalty economically.
So they wouldn't kill the man.
No. Mm-mm. He didn't mean to do it. That's not premeditated murder.
Fighting.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't have been fighting.
Right. They shouldn't have been. Yeah, I suppose you could say, just like the person who's driving a car and texting and kills, say, a pedestrian. Didn't mean to do it, but we classify that as distracted driving. And in my opinion, distracted drivers get off with way less liability for what they've done than they should be subject to. Yes. Well, of course, we have to be very careful when we say, well, this is not to be taken literally. This is a principle that the judgment must fit the crime. But we have right in the same chapter what I'm arguing is an example of the same kind of thing, economic restitution for damage caused inadvertently. Okay? But that is a good question. Also, in Numbers chapter 35, we have a Mosaic stipulation that when someone is guilty of premeditated murder, then there must not be, the penalty must not be an economic one. It must be capital punishment for premeditated murder. And so, basically, that opens up the door to the fact that, well, for other crimes, there is the possibility of economic payment. As a matter of fact, Even going back in the chapters in Exodus, we have a situation where the Lord causes the death of all the firstborn in Egypt. And then he says, and for Israelites, all the firstborn are mine. But of course, rather than slaying all your firstborn in Israel, what did the Lord require? A payment for the firstborn. Okay? And so that's the principle. There's not a barbaric type of thing where if somebody inadvertently cuts off another person's hand, that we take a sword and cut his hand off. All right, that's something that we would say, no, there is enough proof in the Bible that this was to be an economic thing in the case of inadvertent even death. So let's say that a person in a big SUV is texting and kills a pedestrian. Well, should we take that person out and kill him or her? No, it was not intentional. But then on the other hand, the person shouldn't be subject to a, say, $300 fine for driving while distracted, and that's it. No further penalty than that. That is unjust. In the case of the fellow who was killed, the cyclist who was killed, now all of a sudden his wife and children don't have his income, and he was only 30-something years old. He still had more than 30 years of income that they lost. That ought to be the responsibility of the person who was being inattentive behind the wheel, to make up what the family lost in income for the next 30-plus years. How much would that be? Well, probably quite a bit. If the he's to be killed, then he pays for the lost eye. No, because how do you prove what his intent was? Unless he says, oh, this is pretty fortunate. I meant to kill the guy, but I just put his eye out. Well, in a case like that, he didn't kill him, and so even though he might have deserved the death penalty, the guy's still alive, minus an eye. He gets paid for the loss of his eye. I know of a situation where a guy went through med school. He went through an internship. He went through a heart surgery fellowship, and he was building a deck in his backyard using a skill saw to cut a board the right length and cut off half of his first two fingers. Now, how many of you want to get operated on by a heart surgeon that is missing half of his first two fingers in his hand? Okay? Now he's not a heart surgeon, teaches in medical school. You can do that with missing two parts of two fingers, but can't be a heart surgeon. And in a case like that, that was self-inflicted, of course, but what if somebody else had cut off his two fingers? How much lost income does that come to for somebody who would have been a heart surgeon? I don't know how much heart surgeons make. I'm going to take a guess at several hundred thousand dollars a year at least. And the fellow was only about 30 years old. So what's, you know, lost income for 30 years at $300,000 a year? That's a lot of money, like $10 million. Well, let's say the guy couldn't afford to pay $10 million. Well, then he pays what he can. He can't just get off scot-free like people do in our society all the time. this happens. All right, now that's kind of a sink into what happens when we have other issues of restitution in case of economic loss. The instance where the guys strike a pregnant woman doesn't maybe involve a lot of economic loss. It's more mental grief. But what about true economic loss? All right, imagine that you park your car in downtown Greenville. And when you return from your activity, whatever it was, shopping, eating at a restaurant, your car is gone. The first thing you do is call the police. They open an investigation and 3 weeks later arrest a suspect. But unfortunately, your car cannot be found. What might that car thief have done? Might have taken your car to a chop shop, and the chop shop cut it up, took out all the parts, took out the engine, sold the engine, took the wheels, sold the wheels, took everything they could out of the car. And you're not getting your car back. It is gone, G-O-N-E. All right. A trial finds this guy who stole your car guilty of grand theft auto. The judge then sentences him to 10 years in jail, which he probably will not, you know, spend that long, but he's in jail for 10 years. And now taxpayers feed and clothe him and foot his medical bills. And you no longer have a car. Is this just? Okay, somebody want to weigh in on that? Unless, of course, you have car insurance that includes not collision, but comprehensive coverage. If you don't have comprehensive coverage on your car or cars, my advice to you is change your policy and include comprehensive. Because if somebody steals your car and you don't get it back, c'est la vie if you don't have comprehensive coverage. Our society is unjust in this case. Now ask yourself the question, what would be just? All right, so let's go ahead and we're going to look at chapter 22, verses 1 through 4. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and kills it or sells it, he shall repay 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. So this implies if he kills it or if he basically sells it and the animal's gone, if the animal is not recoverable, then this is what is just. Not just a one-for-one restitution, 5 oxen would be worth a fortune, okay? An absolute fortune. I like to think of an ox as a big John Deere tractor in our modern context, because that's what you use an ox for, plowing or for threshing. They were big, strong work animals in an agrarian society. And so if the thief is caught, he is to make fivefold restitution for an ox. Would that be a deterrent, do you suppose? I'll say it would be. Just think, when the people in town find out, this is what the guy's supposed to make restitution for. Or if he steals a sheep and they can't find the sheep, fourfold restitution, because a sheep was not quite as valuable, of course, as an ox was. But in our society, We just simply throw the thief in jail. How would we change that, do you suppose? Back during Mosaic times, there were no jails, no penitentiaries. What now?
Did they have lawyers?
Well, they'd had judges who sat at the gate of the city, but maybe one of those guys could act as your lawyer and take your defense. They were fair about that, but let's say now you've been found guilty for stealing an ox, and it's your responsibility to pay back fivefold. How are we going to accomplish that? Yeah, Neil? That's exactly right. If you didn't have enough to make restitution, you became an indentured servant to the guy who owned the ox until you paid it back. Yep. So, how long would that be? By normal Mosaic stipulation, the indentured servant worked a maximum of 6 years till the next year of the sabbatical year or the year of Jubilee. But in this case, I would imagine there'd be an exception to that because this guy's not going to get his freedom till he's paid for five oxen. Wow. That's quite a while, probably.
But now, if he didn't have an opportunity to work
he does have an opportunity to work. It's for the person that he caused economic loss for. So let's say he's supposed to be a harvester. And instead of the guy having to hire somebody to harvest his wheat, this guy who's making restitution for stealing is going to work as a harvester. And that represents economic benefit for the one who suffered loss. Now, if the thief has no economic resources, of course, the next few verses describe how he is to pay by being an indentured servant. Notice, if he cannot pay, he shall surely be sold for his theft. If the stolen beast is found alive in his possession, whether it's an ox or a donkey or a sheep, he shall pay double because the original owner gets his ox back. By the way, too, Moses has a parenthetical idea here in verse 2. If a thief is found breaking in to somebody's house and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no blood guilt for him. But if the sun has risen on him, there shall be blood guilt for him. In other words, if a thief comes in your house in the middle of the night and you can't identify him because it's dark, you have no idea what his intentions are because it's dark, maybe you can't see if he's got a weapon on him, well, you are free to kill the intruder at night. By the way, too, still to this day, in Greenville, South Carolina, if some thief or some homebreaker breaks into your home tonight and you get out your AR-15 and make .223 diameter holes in him with rapid fire, and the guy's dead before he hits the floor, police come. What happened? Well, this guy broke into my house, and I locked the bedroom door, and he He was trying to break my door down, and I said, "I'm armed. Go away." The guy breaks through anyway. Safety comes off. I've got a 30-round clip in my AR-15, and I'm going to probably keep firing until he's dead. All right? So even today, then, we have the application of this. If it's daylight and a guy breaks into your home and you can see he doesn't have a weapon, then what do? You say, "Hey, buddy, lie down on the floor. I've called the police, and they're going to come here real soon. And as long as you act like you're supposed to, you will live." So that's the parenthetical statement here. Twofold restitution, as we say, is appropriate if the stolen animal is found in the thief's possession. All right, so next thing. What about restitution for unintentional economic loss? If a man causes a field or vineyard to be grazed over, or lets his beast loose and it feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field in his own vineyard. If fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that the stacked grain or the standing grain of the field, in other words, your neighbor's field, is consumed, he who started the fire shall make full restitution. Not too many years ago, guy was out burning brush at the base of Paris Mountain, and he went inside and he wasn't watching the fire, and what happened? Do you remember this? It spread, started going up the side of Paris Mountain, burning everything in its path, and when it got up to the top, it started burning people's houses. Well, in Israelite society, that man would have had to have made restitution for agricultural products that got burned, or if somebody's house got burned, he'd make restitution for that. What happened in the case of this guy who wasn't watching his fire here in Greenville? Well, I don't think anything happened to him. Wow, that's not just. So if a person's hungry animal grazes in another person's field, the animal's owner pays with the best of his produce. A person who starts a fire and spreads to a neighbor's field will make restitution for the damage the fire caused. That's only just. How about restoration for items kept in trust? Verse 7, if a man gives to his neighbor money or goods to keep safe, and it is stolen from the man's house, then if the thief is found, he will pay double the price he stole. If the thief is not found, the owner of the house shall come near to God to show whether or not he has put his hand to his neighbor's property. For every breach of trust, whether it is an ox or for a donkey or for a sheep, for a cloak or any kind of lost thing, of which one says, "This is it," the case of both parties shall come before God, and the one whom God condemns shall pay double to his neighbor. Now, we don't know how this works. The one whom God condemns. Is this something like when the priests had the Urim and the Thummim, and God could show his will through the stones on the breast of the high priest? I'm not sure. Or maybe the Lord causes the judges of the city to have supernatural ability to adjudicate this case. We're not positive about that, but basically, if it's shown to be a breach of trust, then there is judicial decision, and the person who is entrusted with these things and who agreed to be entrusted with them and wasn't careful about how well guarded they were, he'd have to make restitution. If a neighbor entrusts an animal to someone else and it dies, or it's hurt, or it's driven away when no one is looking, the owner receives no restitution. Okay, so here's the verses for that. If a man, verse 10, gives to his neighbor a donkey or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep safe, and it dies or is injured or is driven away without anybody seeing it, an oath by the Lord shall be between them both, the owner and the one that was the trustee, to see whether or not he has put his hand to his neighbor's property. The owner shall accept the oath and shall not make restitution. There shall not be restitution made to him. But if it's stolen from him, he shall make restitution to its owner. If it's torn by beasts, let him bring it as evidence. He shall not make restitution for what has been torn. Now, what about the instance when, and then we close with this, the last thing. What about borrowed property? Somebody borrows his neighbor's animal and it dies in his presence, he must pay the animal's worth. Maybe the guy worked the animal too hard. Or, of course, if somebody rents his neighbor's animal and it dies, no restitution is required. Because the rent that the guy had paid goes to suffice for the animal that the neighbor has lost. All right, so lots of importance here is laid on the crime being economically paid in such a way that there's restitution and there's none of this, oh, okay, well, you were guilty of inattentive driving, here's a $200 fine, that's you're scot-free. No, you weren't watching carefully, somebody was killed, and now a wife doesn't have her husband, or a husband doesn't have his wife. Economic loss is severe. That's not just. One of the key components of our God's character is he is just. All right? We're out of time. You think about any questions that any of this arises in your heart, and we'll talk about it next time. Okay? Have a good week.